Blog Talk Radio.
Minions, and welcome to The Balance. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. Welcome aboard. Welcome to our live stream. And those of you that have been wondering over the last 20 minutes, why am I listening to The Best of The Balance? Well, because, hey, every show with The Balance is the best. We were having some technical issues on our end, but if you were listening on our live stream or on one of our affiliate radio stations, which, by the way, welcome. We are now live, and so, you know, we had to do what they call fillers in the biz. That's radio business talk. In other words, we can't leave you hanging. We can't leave you with any dead air. So that's where the best of was coming through. But we are live. We do this thing called The Balance every Saturday morning. And if you're a fan of the game, you're a fan of The Balance. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. I am the host of this ship, and for the next 2 hours, or we should say 90 minutes now, I will guide you through this crazy maze of sports. And we've got some craziness going on for sure. Steve Wilson, editor and publisher of Speedway Digest, is going to join us. Going to be breaking down NASCAR this weekend. And what's all going on in NASCAR, and certainly we'll talk a little bit about the Truck Series, and we'll talk a little bit about the Xfinity Series as well. But down in Bristol this weekend, Bristol, Tennessee, you know, and that is a perfect segue to what's going to happen up at, on the top of the hour, at 10 o'clock, when we're talking with Rick Riggin. And doing our annual college football preview. And certainly he's biased and leans toward the green. We know that he's a fighting Irish fan, but we'll try to talk some other than Notre Dame. No, I'm just kidding. We'll talk some Notre Dame. Also, what we're going to do is we're going to jump into a little bit of high school football, just a little bit, because we'll do a little regional coverage here. It is so hard when you have a national audience like ours to talk high school football across the spectrum, if you will. But did you see that high school football stadium? I kid you not when I say $70 million. The largest, most expensive high school football stadium in the nation. Won't be that way for long. There's another one being built. Just started construction, and they estimate that to be around $80 million. Texas loves their high school football. That's for sure. So we're standing by for Steve Wilson of Speedway Digest. I'm going to jump into the NASCAR talk and speak of the devil. Mr. Steve Wilson of Speedway Digest, how are you, sir?
I'm all right. I'm getting a late start today, but I'm all right.
You know, I didn't just call you the devil, though, by the way. I said we were standing by waiting for Steve Wilson, editor and publisher of Speedway Digest, and there you popped up, and I just said, speak of the devil. So certainly not the devil, but let's talk a little bit about what's going on this weekend in NASCAR. Steve Wilson, our official contributor for NASCAR, Bristol Motor Speedway, tonight, 7:30. It doesn't get any better or any more legendary than Bristol.
You still there?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yeah, you just kind of dropped out. I thought there was something more to it. It was like you were talking and then you were gone.
I'm sorry. Well, I apologize. Yeah. I was just saying that Bristol is a legendary and a great race. Q Steve, go ahead, buddy.
okay. All right, my fault. Like I said, I'm getting a late start today. So tonight we're gonna the half mile bull ring around Bristol Motor Speedway, 500 laps of high banked action around this place. I mean, how much better does it get around there? Eric Jones tonight, a rookie in this series, he got his first pole yesterday in Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series qualifying for tonight's Bass Pro NRA night race there. He's going to start off and fire off in the front row. And surprisingly enough, Kyle Busch did not make it to the final round of qualifying yesterday. Somebody that, Wednesday night in the Camping World Truck Series, UNOH 200, he went out there, he sat on the pole for that one, he won the race in that one. Last night in the Food City 300, did the same thing, won that one too. But in the cup race for tonight, he's going to start a little bit deeper back into the field, but I don't think it really matters when it comes to that. Because in both those races, he had pit road penalties and had to start at the tail of the line. And in both aspects, in both races, he came up through the field and won the race. So I don't think it really matters where he starts at. He's going to be strong, but I said yesterday he's not going to win tonight's race. He's got a very strong field in front of him. There's a lot of drivers out there that are going to be contending for this win tonight in Bristol, and he's going to have to put up with 500 laps around this place, and it's going to be very, very tough for him, I think, to go for the sweep. If he does it, he's done it before, but it's going to be extremely hard for him, I think.
Well, certainly you can never outrule Kyle Busch. And, the Xfinity Series, Elliott Sadler clinches a playoff spot after finishing third there at Bristol. I tell you what, when you look at drivers that have a legitimate shot at a championship this year, whether it be Xfinity or whether it be the Monster Energy Series, Elliott Sadler is one that you really have to keep your eyes on.
Yeah, because it's really been a strange season for him. Last year, at the end of the year, he left out of the year, and then it was announced that his sponsor wasn't coming back. He didn't even know whether he was going to be able to come back and he was going to be able to race this year or not. Then at the very almost next to last moment, the sponsor says they were going to come back. They were going to fund him for the full season. And here he is right back one more time. He's going to contend yet again for the playoffs this year, clinching it last night to get in just here in the next couple of weeks. I mean, we only have three full-time NASCAR Xfinity Series winners this year in that series. And, by virtue of that and Kyle Busch winning last night, he's so far ahead of, that 13th position out there that, he's going to be able to the clinching occurred. So you've got that aspect out there. You've got a lot of people down there at the bottom. Brendan Gaughan last night, unfortunately, he wrecked out of the race last night. There were some issues with him, but I think he and some of the other drivers that are fighting for that 12th spot down there at the bottom are going to have to be extra careful, for the next couple of weeks. They're going to go out there, they're going to be Road America. They've got Darlington, they've got Richmond, they've got races coming up here. And, it's good for Elliott Sadler that he doesn't have to worry about it, but there's drivers that are still fighting at the bottom down there that are, really trying to get in, and, especially, with Brendan Gaughan last night wrecking out, I think he's only about 43 points out right now, and there's a lot of points that can be made up over the next couple of weeks.
Well, I'll tell you one thing for sure, and, if you got to get your first career pole, the place to get it is Bristol. Eric Jones, and we've talked about him before on this show, will lead the field to the green flag at Bristol Motor Speedway. Jones saved his best for the last qualifying Friday night to jump up to the top of the leaderboard in the final round. The fastest lap for the number 77 Furniture Row Racing Toyota was 128. Miles 0.082 miles per hour. The pole is the first for Eric Jones in the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series. Talk with us a little bit about rookie Eric Jones.
Yeah, so, you know, with Eric Jones starting out there on the pole, like I said, I mean, he's been a driver this year that I think that we've had to watch him, you know, off and on, and then he's kind of got this boost over here over the last couple of weeks where he finally did. I mean, it was just a matter of time at, you know, some point, when is he going to get that call from Joe Gibbs Racing on taking over some car, which car over there in that stable, and that finally just came over here just a couple of weeks ago that he's going to take over the number 20 car in 2018, leaving Furniture Row Racing. But, I mean, he's still very much dedicated there to Furniture Row at this point. You know, this weekend he went out there, and, I mean, he beat some of the best people out there in the field, and not by a whole lot out there. Kyle Larson is going to start right off beside him. And, I mean, it was just a matter of just, you know, just a couple of tenths out there that he was able to, you know, squeeze that pole out over Kyle Larson. Kyle Larson's one of those guys that, you know, you can't count nowhere. Again, another driver that you can't count out. And, you know, Eric Jones is a very young driver, but I think he's one of these drivers that you have to look at when it comes to the short tracks, because he's not too far removed from the short tracks at this point. I mean, he's come up very quickly throughout the series, you know, for the truck series. He's been in the Xfinity series for a very short period of time before he came over to the Monster Energy Cup series. I mean, obviously, he's getting his start. As everybody knows, the story, beating Kyle Busch, you know, in the Snowball Derby down at Five Flags Speedway. I mean, that story has been told 100 times at this point. But, you know, that story is just only a couple of years old. So, I mean, his ascension to this point already is, you know, just a couple of years removed. So, I mean, these kind of short tracks out here are very much right in his wheelhouse, and I think that he's going to be able to put those, you know, where he was just a couple of years ago, and put these right in his wheelhouse for tonight. I think 500 laps out there, you know, it's not something that, you know, he's only done once before, and he substituted for Denny Hamlin back in 2016 when Denny Hamlin had back spasms, but that was only for about two-thirds or so of the event in 2016. But I think, you know, these full races like this, I think it, you know, becomes incredibly hard. But as long as you're out front, you know, passing becomes a premium, and he's going to have to hold off Kyle Larson at the end of the day, which that's going to be a driver that very much knows how to get around some of these small bullring-type tracks out there with his dirt experience.
We're talking with Steve Wilson, editor and publisher of Speedway Digest, doing our official look at NASCAR, the Monster Energy NASCAR Series. You know, you were talking about drivers moving around and with Eric Jones and trying to get a deal there. But the guy who did solidify a deal it's time to plant some roots is Chris Buescher. I believe he's now got some stability. As they announced Friday at Bristol Motor Speedway, the 24-year-old Buescher has signed a multi-year deal to remain at JTG Daltrey Racing. Buescher can now lay some roots down after joining the organization following his rookie season with Front Row Motorsports in 2015. Buescher was in the Xfinity Series with Ross Fenway, so not really surprised that he was able to land this deal with JTG.
Yeah, Chris Buescher is a guy that, you know, it's a really strange situation at this point, is that he went through the Xfinity Series Championship with Ross Fenway Racing. He was on loan to Front Row, and then he was put on loan there to JTD Doherty Racing. This deal continues that loan off to them, because Ross Fenway Racing at this point is not ready to expand off of that two-team Monster Energy Cup Series that they have currently. And this, you know, just kind of puts it back, just showing that, you know, Ross Fenway Racing, unfortunately, is just not the powerhouse that they used to be in, you know, years ago. He still stays very much under contract to, you know, Ross Fenway Racing as one of their development drivers. Ross Fenway has other development drivers out there like Ty Majeski and others that, you know, are coming up through the ranks and, you know, does run part-time, you know, or select races for them in the NASCAR Xfinity Series like he did out in Iowa. But, you know, Chris Buescher is you know, a case that, you know, is very, you know, odd that we're not used to seeing, especially in an organization that it puts them on loan to a competing manufacturer out there and, you know, doesn't necessarily put them in one of their own cars or one of their own brand cars, so to speak. So, you know, with Chris Buescher being able to go over to JTG Doherty Racing, you know, last year for his first year there, and now signs a multi-year agreement with them, that just shows that, you know, with Ruff Finlay, as I said, they're just not ready to move up. They're not ready to add a third car right now. And it will give him some stability knowing that, you know, for the next couple of years at least, that he's got a place in the series. He can continue to hone his skills. And maybe at some point down the line that, you know, he will maybe be able to return back over to, you know, Roush Fenway. They will expand possibly to that third team, you know, because they do have another charter that is kind of still floating out there on their part that they can move around if they need to at some point. You know, I don't know when that may occur or what may occur with that, but, you know, I think it's good for him that he has the talent. He's able to gain or, you know, hone that talent because, you know, his partner over there, his with AJ Allmendinger, I think he's a guy that, you know, he's not been exceptional on the oval tracks, but I think he's got a lot of skills in many other areas and driving abilities that he can learn from over there at JTG.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Ryan Blaney. Ryan Blaney paced the final Monster Energy Series practice afternoon, Friday afternoon at Bristol with a lap of 128.554 miles per hour. And then Kyle Larson was second fastest with 128.065. Ryan Newman was third fastest at 127.784. Jamie McMurray was fourth fastest at 127.487. And five-time Bristol winner Kyle Busch rounded out the top five of the 127 at 127.258 miles per hour. Ryan Blaney seems to be in it to win it.
Yeah, that's like the growing theme every single week. We always talk about Ryan Blaney being up there at the top of the practice charts each and every week. Him and that team over at Wood Brothers and the team that they've assembled over there with their lead engineers, their crew chiefs, and the cars that are being prepared by Penske, their technical alliance, their engineering that they get help from, the Roush Yates Motors, and everything, the package that they've put together over there, and Ryan Blaney behind the wheel of that car. It's not a shocker that, you know, they didn't, you know, Penske, that, you know, again, you know, runs on loan from Penske, that Penske didn't yank him back and put him in that number 12 car in 2018, expanding that organization. I mean, he's just exceptional in every aspect of the sport, no matter where he goes, whatever track he goes to. But, you know, this is just a growing theme each and every week. He qualifies well. He practices well. He seems to stay out of a majority of the trouble that happens on the track. And I would say a good, fair majority of the time. It's not typically his fault in problems that occur. It's usually a mechanical issue or somebody else's problem that, you know, gets him in trouble during the race or, during the event. And I think that's why people really like him as far as a race car driver. He typically tries to bring the car home clean. He finishes well. He's won for them already this year. And that gives that, you know, that gives that organization really, you know, something that they've not had in the last couple of years. You know, it's good for him. I think, you know, he's going to do exceptionally well when he goes back over to Penske. We're going to see the same types of qualifying, potentially some more wins out of him. When we get back through the field out there, you know, you're just talking about Kyle Busch out there, you know, finishing off in fifth. But, you know, unfortunately, like we were just talking about here, you know, Kyle Busch did not, excuse me, I'm sorry. Kyle Busch did not, you know, go out there and he did not, qualify that well. He did not finish off, didn't even make it into the final round. He's going to go out there and he's going to start 18th tonight in the race. So, I mean, he had a little bit of a slower lap out there. So, it's not always indicative. I think he's going to be able to go out there and make up to the field. Jamie McMurray is a driver that, you know, in years ago when he was at Roush Fenway, I mean, he was very, very good there at Bristol Motor Speedway. I don't think that he's lost any of it when he gets to a track like this. There's a lot of variety of drivers there in that top five that I think that you're going to take
and have to look at all of them across the board, but, you know, definitely Ryan Blaney. You know, we talk about him every single week, and I don't know what else to say about him. He's just an exceptional driver at the end of the day.
Well, let's talk about some of the other storylines coming out of Bristol. Certainly Brad Keselowski said there was more than one reason why he decided to shut down the Camping World Truck Series team, at the end of the season. Keselowski, who has fielded trucks in the series since 2008, addressed the media for the first time since Thursday's announcement, joking that he had won the lottery and the decision, had he won the lottery, the decision may not have been made. So are we to read into the tea leaves here that Brad Keselowski is not really wanting to be an owner anymore? He's shifted to a different type of owner, maybe a sprint car series owner, maybe a Monster Energy owner, or maybe he's just not wanting to be an owner anymore. What can we read in to the tea leaves with Brad Keselowski shutting down his Camping World Truck Series team?
Well, the old adage in racing is if you want to make a fortune, to make a fortune in racing, so to make a small fortune in racing, start with a large fortune. You know,
right.
that's how it is. You know, and if Brad Keselowski had any inclination that he was going to come into the NASCAR Camping World Truck Series and make a profit into it because of the way that it's structured, I think he was greatly mistaken. I think that he saw something that just wasn't there. He did a lot, you know, on the flip side of that, I think he did a lot of great things for a lot of drivers out there. He put a lot of people to work. He did a lot of things for the series at the same time. But, you know, if he coming in 10 years ago and he thought that he was going to make a profit into this, he was sadly mistaken. This is a sport that has been overrun by, you know, multi-billionaires and billionaires at this point. Every single one of them has hundreds of car dealerships or other profitable businesses that support their racing endeavors and keeps them profitable. You know, that's just a very small percentage of their portfolio, at the end of the day. And he said that he was losing $1 million a year by keeping the truck series open. And I think that's probably just about right, considering, you know, the way that it's structured at this point. You know, the last place truck in most of these races are making no more than $5,000 to $7,000. And, you know, the first place truck is making no more than around $30,000 to $40,000 an event. And that's pretty standard, you know, at this point, aside from a few off races like I've heard Las Vegas and Daytona and some of those other tracks like that, you know, really want to pump up the purses. Those ones are a little bit higher, of course, but your standard races out there are not paying anything else. And I mean, when you have to pay for, you know, 20 people on the ground every single weekend, when you're paying for engines and drivers and everything else, I mean, yeah, it's not a profitable business at all. It's hard to get sponsors. Nobody wants to sponsor you. You know, there's been multiple reports out there about, you know, Kyle Busch. There's been lawsuits out there that have opened the books up and shown just how much money it costs, you know, these drivers to sit in a truck, and it runs into tens to very high tens of thousands of dollars per race just to put a driver in one of these trucks. And it's just not a profitable business at all at this point. He did say that he's going to, at some point, he wishes to be a NASCAR a Cup Series driver, I mean Cup Series owner. What that means is he is years and years down the line, but he's got to find some type of business to support it, just like everybody else. Rick Hendrick, you know, Jack Roush, you know, every single driver, I mean, every single owner in the garage has some kind of profitable business that sustains their racing ventures. And for him, that's going to have to be his only path to ownership once more. We're not in the 1950s, 1960s, and 1970s anymore, where a guy that, you know, runs a vending machine company or, you know, runs a, you know, a single car dealership can run a race car, run a race team, and make it profitable. This is very much in an era of, you know, you need hundreds of millions of dollars now, unfortunately, to run a race team.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, the thing about it, and the sponsors have to be there, too. And it, all the stars have to line up. And you're totally right. Everybody doesn't live the life of Roger Penske. Not that there's anything wrong with that. And other owners, you know, certainly, you know, Roush and other owners live the life of Riley, if you will. But they've earned that, and it's taken time to get that way. And quite frankly, it's taken a lifetime to get that way. And you mentioned, you know, they have other business entities in place, you know, and Penske being in one of those with the multiple auto dealerships that he has. He has one right here in Indianapolis. I think he has a couple here in Indianapolis. But, yes, it does. It takes a lot of money to run these teams. And if you don't have everything in place, it's best just to bail when you can. And, you know, $1 million a year doesn't seem like a lot when you're talking about racing. But when it's your own money, it's a lot of money. And, you know, so certainly that's – I think he made the best decision for him and a best business decision for him. Speaking of business decisions, looks like Matt Kenseth isn't going to have a ride in 2018, which is unfortunate because certainly he was an icon and a name that everybody knew who Matt Kenseth was. And nothing against Eric Jones, who's going to come up and take over the number 20 Toyota for Joe Gibbs Racing. But Joe Gibbs Racing had to make the business decision that Matt Kenseth wasn't who he needed in his car. Do you think that Matt Kenseth will have a ride in 2018, or will he just kind of come to the track, come to the track with a helmet and bag and ready to go?
Well, he said at this time he's got nothing. Just this past weekend, he's got really nothing ready or nothing scheduled for 2018, so it's it doesn't sound like, you know, he's too worried at this point. And what happens, who knows? I mean, there's a lot of flux still to happen, and we've still not heard where some of these cars or some of these seats in 2018 are going to go. I mean, there's still a little bit of flux still to happen, as I said. You know, Furniture Row Racing, they have a second car. They've not announced, you know, what's going to happen. They said that they would like to continue running that car. They have a charter for that car, but it still comes down to sponsorship. If they decide not to run that car, then they have to sell that sponsorship. They just can't hold on to the sponsorship. They're either going to have to sell it, they're going to have to lease it. So, you know, that could be potentially another team that will be able to gain a charter, whether that's a current team or whether that's a team looking to expand. You know, there's other teams out there that are, you know, you've got Richard Childress Racing. Paul Menard left them. There's a seat potentially open over there for him. You've got Richard Petty Motorsports. I mean, right now, I mean, it sounds like they're looking to really expand back to their two cars and put Bubba Wallace into that car. So, I mean, yeah, there's still some expansion. Oh, and, you know, there's still a maybe over at Stuart Haas Racing. We still don't know what's going to happen with Kurt Busch, and we don't know what's going to happen with Danica Patrick. Kurt Busch doesn't have a contract. They said that they're potentially working towards a contract for him. Potentially Danica Patrick isn't coming back. So is there two seats available over there? Could one of them be filled by, you know, Matt Kenseth? Who knows? I mean, there's so much still left to find out this year that it sounds like he's just not worried enough to care at this point. And he knows that there's plenty of seats potentially open and not enough people moving into the series right at this moment to worry, but to any great extent, I think, and we're still trying to figure out to really to some degree on, you know, where or what's going to happen.
Right, absolutely. And, you know, I wish we had time to really break down all these different cars and contract issues and stuff, but we don't. But we do have a race in Bristol tonight, and we only got you for a few more minutes. We've got to get into our college football talk. But talk with us a little bit about the ins and outs and the X factors and the dark horses, if you will, for tonight at Bristol.
Well, you know, Bristol, yet again, they put some more of that sticky VHT substance down at the bottom, 30, 40 laps into last night's event. Everybody moved right back to the top. Doesn't seem like anybody wants to run it. High groove is the preferred groove yet again. They just cannot open up that second groove in the bottom lane, get very many people running down there. You've got a few people running at the bottom, not a whole lot of people. Getting a two-groove racetrack out there at Bristol, it just seems like almost impossible at this point. We're going to get a lot of stacked-up racing out there on the high groove. How it's going to go tonight, you know, 500 laps, there's going to be potentially a lot of carnage and a lot of mad, mad people, hopefully, at the end of this race. And, you know, that's what we look for. We look for a lot of mad people at the end of this race, is because that's what makes Bristol a fun event. I see, you know, Kyle Busch yet again charging through this field. Like I said, he starts halfway deep in the field, but, you know, it didn't seem to matter in the truck race, didn't seem to matter in the Xfinity race last night. He did it twice already. Can he do it again tonight? Possibly. Other drivers out there, there's a lot of drivers to continue watching out for. Kyle Larson, he likes running that high line. I think he's going to be a driver you're going to watch out for. Eric Jones starting from the pole, I think it's a good thing we see a rookie starting from the pole. First-time pole winner out there, it's a good thing we see new blood sitting up there at the top in the sport. It's always a good thing seeing new faces. And lots of good things going on out there tonight at Bristol Motor Speedway. Night race at Bristol, always a good thing. And, for somebody's feelings, is liable to get hurt out there, which you've got Darlington and then you've got Richmond. So, you know, more feelings will get hurt over the next couple of weeks.
That's right. Nothing better than Bristol at night, unless it's Richmond at night. But that's a whole nother story. Steve Wilson of Speedway Digest, thanks for joining us, sir. Make sure that people follow you and your masterpieces through the race. How can they do that, sir?
You can follow us at Speedway Digest on Twitter, facebook.com/Speedway Digest, and speedwaydigest.com.
All right, Steve. We'll talk with you soon. Have yourself a good race weekend.
Thanks, man. Take care.
Thank you. Steve Wilson, our official NASCAR contributor, editor-in-chief, chief publisher of Speedway Digest. My name is Hallmark with El Presidente. And we bring something back that we like to bring back every year. Our annual college football preview will be back on the air here in just a moment with Rick Riggin. We'll be right back right here on the Balance Radio Network. All right, and welcome back to The Balance. My name is Saul Marquez, El Presidente. Well, we want now to jump right back into our college football. Man, it gives you goosebumps to know that college football is back, and our official college go-to guy, and you know him as Mr. Rick Riggin. Rick, how are you, sir?
Pretty good, Tom. How have you been doing?
Welcome back. I'm good, man. Welcome back to The Balance. Hope things are going good with you. You know, we're going to get into the college football talk, but you know, we can't talk to Rick Riggin without talking about some high school football. And Wright's put a whomping on Henderson, Kentucky last night. Talk with us a little bit about what happened down there in Evansville. I know Evansville Memorial got a win over Jasper. Central got a win. I think Boonville got a win. Talk with us a little bit about what happened in week one, if you will, high school football down in southern Indiana.
Well, we got like five teams this year that are going to be hyper-competitive in the SIAC. We got Rice and Central, Castle, Modern Day are always good, and then Memorial is going to be really good this year. But it probably had the best quarterback and running back combo in the city. So, you know, they get a win at Jasper. Central gets a huge, you know, big blowout win against Paley. Like you said, Rice and, you know, put a whooping on Henderson County. Castle had a comfort behind win against Terre Haute South, and I think Modern Day plays today, so we'll see how that plays out.
Well, you know, bringing to home here, but certainly we have little miniature college teams here in Indianapolis where I live, and there was a great battle last night between Warren Central and Center Grove. Certainly Center Grove is a younger team this year, but it's always good to see two powerhouses like Warren Central and Center Grove. Would you agree with that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, are they 6A? Is that what that is now, Warren Central and Center Grove?
Yeah, that is correct, sir.
Yeah, so basically you're like many colleges.
Yeah, speaking of many colleges in high school, and we'll get on into our college football talk, but did you hear about that stadium out in Texas? $70 million for this high school stadium, and you thought the Rice Bowl was something spectacular.
I didn't hear about that, but I can't remember where it's at, but you'll have to look it up. There's another stadium just like that, the video boards, you know, double-decker seats on both sides, and you look at this thing, you think it's a college stadium, but it's not. It's a high school stadium. It's really impressive.
Oh, yeah.
It might be in Texas or it might be in California. I can't remember.
Yeah, and there's another one that they're building also is going to estimate when it's all done around $80 million. I know they're going to use it for various different things. They're going to share it with other schools and stuff. But it just amazes me. It amazes me that they get a vote that says, hey, yeah, we'll go ahead and spend that much money. Of course, you know, in that neck of the woods, if you will, there's a lot of money in oil. And so, you know, these kids come back from high school, get into mommy and daddy's money, and just start building high school football stadiums, that's for sure. Rick Riggin joins us, and we begin our annual football talk. So we'll start with your favorite, and love to your heart. We'll start there, and we'll kind of work our way around the NCAA. Next week, week one, and we will talk about IU and Ohio State. A big game for both teams with a lot of implications for the season. But let's start with Notre Dame and your outlook on the Notre Dame Fighting Irish.
Well, I mean, it's got to be better than last season, right?
Can't be any worse, right?
I mean, for Brian Kelly's sake, it better be a lot better than last season. So, you know, yeah. They're doing a lot of different things this year. They're doing a lot of things that look really good up front. But, you know, other than that quarterback battle they had last year, you know, all the recruiting and everything on paper looked pretty good. But then for some reason that didn't translate to wins. So a lot of new things this year, new coaching staff, Chip Long from Memphis, new offensive coordinator, Mike Elko from Wake Forest, new defensive coordinator. And, Tom, you know, defense was probably the major problem the Irish had last year. New quarterback coach, former quarterback Tommy Reese. So they got a lot of new things, a lot of new offenses and schemes defensively, offensively to install. You know, that takes time. It takes a couple of years. But we're going to see, because this new coaching staff is probably what's going to try to save Brian Kelly's job at Notre Dame. So we're going to see how this plays out. But like I said, they have a lot of new toys to play with at Notre Dame this year. A lot of it looks really exciting right now, but we'll see as the season progresses if that's going to translate to any wins.
Should we talk about Alabama football yet? Should we be rolling tide? No, I just got a text from a friend of mine. It says, you're going to talk some Roll Tide. So we certainly will talk some Roll Tide. You know what? No, let's go ahead and let's get into that conversation. How arrogant,
okay.
Let's just start with this. How arrogant is Nick Saban? How arrogant is he to decide on who gets suspended and who doesn't get suspended, who gets to live by the rules, who doesn't get to live by the rules, just because in week one you're playing Florida?
Well, are we talking about the kid on his team that had the DUI and he's not getting suspended
yeah.
for it?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he got the DUI, and okay, here's the story for those that don't know, and I'll have to pull it up here in just a second. So he gets the DUI, he's at a party. Imagine that, University of Alabama football player at a party, and apparently it was hot. He was like, I don't really know. He wasn't driving, but he was sitting in the parking lot in his car with the car running. And air conditioning on or something, and that's why you got the DUI, because you can't sit in the driver's seat and be intoxicated. Even if you're not driving, you can get charged with a DUI, and that's exactly what happened. But Nick Saban said, you know what? This is way more important. This is game one against Florida is way – I mean the other Florida,
Florida
team,
State.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, Florida State.
Yeah, Florida State. Florida State. This game against Florida State is far bigger than your DUI. You're playing. Don't worry about it. I'm Nick Saban. I got this. I just – things like that just really irks me about Nick Saban.
So what if they were playing somebody like Chattanooga or whatever, some Division II school in week one? Would he be suspended then? Probably.
Well, that's
so.
My point.
Probably.
That's my point.
It's Florida State.
That's exactly my
point. Yeah, all I was going to say, we shouldn't be surprised because it's Florida State. We shouldn't be surprised, really, because something like this happens at Alabama every year where he's got a couple of kids on the team that have DUIs or have something going on academically, and they're not being really suspended from football. They're just being punished in other ways. But, you know, other schools – they would immediately be suspended from football. But I don't know. It's different. I guess he gets to play by different rules. I guess he lives in a gray area down in Tuscaloosa. So it seems like something like this is happening every year. That's how he handles his business. So, but they win. So I guess that's all that matters.
Well, they say winning changes everything. And so certainly, you know, I'm sure throughout the year we'll have plenty of time to talk about Alabama football, as I'm sure that they'll come up every single week because they're the darlings of the South. And don't get me wrong, Alabama certainly is a very good team. But a lot of times we lose focus in covering college football that there are multiple other college football games going on. There are other people that could actually win a championship. It's not always about Clemson. It's not always about Alabama. It's not always about Notre Dame, no pun intended. There are other teams. So let's talk a little let's talk a little bit about some of the as we go into week one, some of the upsets, if you will, or shocking upsets that can or cannot happen. Let's talk about things that maybe could happen and wouldn't be very surprising. Southern Alabama over Ole Miss. Thoughts?
Well, that's not going to happen, even though Ole Miss is going through some coaching changes right now. You know, they hire their coach, Hugh Freeze. Fire their coach, Hugh Freeze, you know, for the phone calls to the brothels and, you know, stuff like that going on down at Ole Miss. But, I don't see an upset happening there.
Well, Vegas has the spread at a minus 24, so we'll see. Wyoming over Iowa. Iowa.
Yeah, no upset happening there either. You know, Kirk Ferentz, the Iowa, he's got a pretty good pro-style like team going on there at Iowa. They're middle of the pack this year in the Big Ten. I don't see any problems here with Iowa.
Well, BYU over LSU. There we go. LSU is far more talented this year, but LSU is LSU.
This one is intriguing because we don't know how the new LSU is going to look against BYOU, you know, because
Yeah,
I know.
Go ahead.
But we don't know how LSU is really going to look under Coach O at Orangeron, the Cajun Cookie Monster, and his whole new coaching staff he's got going on. He takes over last year. Now the team is fully in his hands. So we're going to see. This could be an interesting matchup. I won't go LSU here, but BYU seems like they find a way every year to come up big in these big games. So that's an intriguing matchup.
And here's a game that I'm going to keep an eye on next week, and I think it's very, very possible if a few things go right, and that's Middle Tennessee over Vanderbilt. This might be the best Blue Raiders team ever. It's a home game for Middle Tennessee. It's really going to be rocking the house, if you will, going to be loud. And at least one in-state opponent has been able to beat Vanderbilt, or Vandy, if you want to use the lingo, Vandy. So Middle Tennessee over Vanderbilt.
Hey, I'll take that one. I'll agree with you there. I mean, since James Franklin left Vanderbilt to go to Penn State, I don't know, is Vandy still have a football program? Because what, they average 2 or 3 wins a year now, past couple of years. I'll take that. I Middle Tennessee State beating them. Watch out for Kentucky in the SEC. Okay, so since we're going to talk about the lower end of the SEC, watch out for Kentucky this year. They might be 9-10 win team. Yeah.
Let's never talk about
it.
Never to be brought up again. I'm just kidding. Let's talk about James Madison over East Carolina. This game's going to be so close, Vegas says I'm staying away from that game. JMU to beat NDSU in last year's FCS playoffs ended the Bison's 5-year national title run. But James Madison over East Carolina.
Yeah, now you're getting out of the region that I even pay attention to. So, East Carolina, I'm always going to take the Division I program over the D2 school. I know a lot of these games, we get D2 playing the D1. The Division II schools really come up big. So, you know, Appalachian State last year almost beat Tennessee, or 2 years ago almost beat Tennessee. They actually did go to Michigan several years ago and beat Michigan in the Big House. So you never know what these Division II schools are going to do. But I'm just going to stick with East Carolina here.
East Carolina it is. Troy over Boise State. Troy won 10 games last year. Remains Boise State. And winning on the Broncos' blue turf is almost impossible. I can't see Boise State losing at home in game one.
I can't either. This would be a Boise State win. But Troy is one of these teams that they're up and down, like, year to year. So we'll see what kind of year Troy has, because this could be an intriguing matchup, really. Because they had a game against USC a few years ago where they were supposed to literally lose by 4 or 5 touchdowns, and USC had to come back and beat them by, like, 6 or 7. So we'll see what Troy does.
Well, Troy's a good – Yeah, Troy's a good team, and Troy's one of those teams that doesn't get a lot of national pub and doesn't get a lot of national looks, and they kind of come in, win games, and leave, and you know they're winning games, and nobody's really talking about them. But certainly, yeah, I think it'll be a good game, absolutely. But I mean, Boise State again is Boise State. Here's going to be another good matchup, Arkansas State. I think they could beat Nebraska. You know, the Red Wolves traditionally haven't peaked until the end of the year, but maybe they'll take some time to get into hyperdrive, and maybe they'll get routed in Lincoln. But A-State is the Sun Belt's most consistent winning bet for a season, and Nebraska has a lot of work to do. They're in the Big Ten. I know a little bit about Nebraska, and I'm going to tell you that they're not ready to beat Arkansas State in game one.
You got some rum in your coffee this morning?
I got a lot of rum in my coffee this morning. No, in all reality, Nebraska, let's think about this. Nebraska, how many times have they lost games that they should have won and that nobody thought that they would lose? And how many times have they won games that they should have never won?
Well, I think they're right there at the top half of the Big Ten. I think there's a hump. They just need a hump or a hurdle, whatever, however you want to phrase it, that they just can't quite get over. But I think that they are getting close to that point there, and I think they're poised to become one of the top four teams in the Big Ten.
Well, let's talk about the Big Ten. Let's stretch it a little bit further, if you will. Remember the old Lou Armstrongs where you could just stretch it and stretch it and stretch it?
Louis Armstrong, the trumpet player.
That's what I meant. Let's see how far we can stretch. That's hilarious. Let's see how far we can stretch this. Here's something that, yes, it's a stretch, but not inconceivable. Maryland over Texas. Think about this. This Texas roster just lost to Kansas. I think Maryland could beat Texas.
Well, here's the thing with Texas. Now they got Tom Herman as head coach. So this is going to be a much different Texas team than what we've seen underneath Charlie Strong. I expect Texas within 2 years to compete and maybe even win the Big 12. This is going to be a totally different Texas team. I see Texas winning eight or nine games this year. So against Maryland, I don't see Maryland having a shot against Texas. There's a quarterback battle going on in Texas, but I think Shane Buechele is going to be the starter, and I think Texas gets 8 or 9 wins this year.
Let's keep the Stretch Armstrong theme going on, Appalachian State over Georgia. Remember what Appalachian State did to Michigan 10 years ago? Rocked the world. It can happen.
That's what I was talking about earlier. They went to the Big House and beat Michigan.
Right. Absolutely. Let's get to the big –
Real quick about that game, Appalachian State and Georgia. For my sake, I hope they don't beat Georgia because Georgia comes to South Bend in week two. And I want Notre Dame to hand Georgia their first loss, and it helps Notre Dame's a really tough schedule anyway. But you know how all that stuff factors in at the end of the year and whenever they start deciding bowl games and who's getting in the playoff or not. But if Georgia comes out and loses to Appalachian State in week one, then when Notre Dame beats Georgia week two, that's not going to look so good for Notre Dame. So we want Georgia to win that one.
Well, let's talk about the game that everybody's talking about. It's obviously going to be ESPN game day, if you will. It's going to be down in Bloomington. When was the last time we saw that happen? When was the last time that ESPN game day was down in Bloomington, Indiana? They're not there for Indiana. They're there for Ohio State, but that's okay. We'll take it. But how – let's talk about this game both realistically and logically. Realistically, IU can beat Ohio State. Logically, they can beat Ohio State because, let's face it, oftentimes, many times, Indiana, especially recently in football, have been able to be very competitive with Ohio State, and they've got a new coach. They went to a bowl game last year. How imperative is this for the playoff hopes of Ohio State at this game? I think this has a lot of playoff implications. I think if for whatever reason and somehow, yes, it's a stretch, but I think if IU can beat Ohio State, that might put Ohio State out of the playoff contention.
It very well could. I mean, it's depending on what Indiana does the rest of the year, but, yeah, definitely this game is – one of these games, well, you know, for these big major programs, every game is a, you know, a game for the playoffs, depending on when if they win or lose. But here's the thing about this game. That's right. Kevin Wilson gets fired from IU. Now Kevin Wilson is the offensive coordinator for Ohio State. So he's going to be looking to go back into IU, and if they're up 70 by 70 points, I don't think he's going to take his foot off the gas. So that's what the IU is going to be going against. We got one more Saturday separates us from that game because that's actually a little week and a half. That's a Thursday night game. So almost 2 weeks away from that game. So.
Hey, but it's not too early to be talking about it.
That's why we're here.
That's why we're here. College football preview, talking with Rick Riggin. Rick joins us every year to talk college football with us, and sometimes he wanders and struggles on into the NFL with us from time to time, too. And I know he's going to be playing in the Balanced Fantasy League this year, so we'll see how good
Looking forward to that.
How,
It's going to be a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun with it every year. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, some of the power rankings, if you will. And let's just kind of go by conference, I guess, rather than team. Because each conference is different. And we talk about, well, that's the SEC. And, you know, that's a lot more powerful when it comes to the playoffs. And that's the Big Ten or that's the ACC. So we'll start here. Certainly everybody, I think, that puts the power rankings together would say the ACC is the top in the power ranking, and, of course, the SEC followed by there. There are five teams that have the right combination of talent, experience, and in the right spots and the right coaches that we could see a national champion out of the ACC this year.
That last thing you said, coaches, that's the key word. That's why I believe the ACC is the premier conference in the country, and the SEC isn't anymore. The SEC has one coach. Who else do they have for premier head coaches in the SEC after Nick Saban? And that's the difference. That's why the ACC, I believe, is the top conference in the country.
Well, let's talk about the SEC. As you mentioned, the SEC is no longer the top in the country. Now, number two isn't that bad per se when you're talking about power rankings. I think it's going to be fun to watch this season, this year, with the quarterbacks in the SEC, Jalen Hunt and Jacob Eason and Shane Patterson and Nick Fitzgerald and Jake Bentley. We're all thrown into the fire last year. And you know, it's easy to get kind of fired up to see how each player has developed since their freshman season and what it means for each team. But certainly, you know, the SEC is a strong power conference to beat. But what are your thoughts about the SEC in 2017-2018?
Well, you know, Alabama is still going to be Alabama. The big question mark with Alabama is
Roll Tide.
It is the defense. You know, they really got ate up by the draft. You know, their defensive line kind of got torn apart by the draft. So we're going to see. You know, they're always one of the top defensive teams in the country, if not the best defensive team in the country. But they got big questions on defense. Watch out for Florida this year. Jim McElwain has got that program going in the right direction, and likely to be named the starter for Florida, Malik Zaire, former Notre Dame quarterback.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He didn't want to stay at Notre Dame anymore, did he?
Well, he saw the writing on the wall, I think, with Deshaun Kizer, you know, at Notre Dame. But then Malik Zaire decides to transfer to Florida, and Kizer goes to NFL. But
Exactly. So, obviously, we can't let the day go without talking about the Big Ten. Certainly, Ohio State and then Wisconsin are at the top of the conference. And they're certainly – we got Michigan, and I'm not excluding Michigan in that mix. And Michigan's still a relatively young team. You know, Penn State showed that they could make some noise. IU showed that they could make some noise. Certainly, I would rank the Big Ten – overall, as three behind the SEC in the power conference rankings, if you will.
Yep, I'd be good with that. With the emergence of Penn State now, what James Franklin's done there, they have a close loss in Rose Bowl last year against USC. That's one thing we didn't talk about. Yo, it's the Pac-12, but I'm fine with putting the Big Ten three. Next on the list, okay.
Well, I had them ranked, but I had the Big 12 before the Pac-12. But we can go ahead and talk about the Pac-12. But I have them in the ranked number 5.
I was just
going to
say, with Ohio State, and you could probably put Penn State number 2 right now, the Big 10. The way they played last year, they didn't lose a whole lot of players from last year. That's going to be a big, physical, scary team. We don't know what Michigan's going to be yet. Everybody thinks they're kind of just going to regress a little bit this year because, like Alabama, they really got torn apart by the draft, losing Jabril Peppers, you know, Jake Butt, star tight end. They lost a lot of key players. And then Wisconsin, also pretty good. So I think with 4 to 5 solid teams in the Big Ten, that puts them ahead of the Pac-12. But it's going to be fun to watch. I'm really interested in seeing Penn State this year. I love it that they're back. They're being talked about, being talked about as one of the elite teams in the country. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, absolutely. The Pac-12, Big 12, they're both going to be good. We'll talk a little bit about the Pac-12 more in just a moment. In my number four slot there, I threw in the Big 12. The Big 12 perception hangs in the balance, if you will, and perception is reality. And that reality is likely to be shaped this year, certainly by Lincoln Riley and Tom Herman as well. So let's talk a little bit about some of the old-timers clubs, if you will, in the Big 12 with Bill Snyder as an Oklahoma State team that is really loaded and set to make some noise. And I put, because of Oklahoma State, I put the Big 12 at number four in my power conference rankings.
Hey, you got to watch out for the fighting Bill Snyder's of Kansas State. They always find ways to win big games for some reason. Maybe it's just because Bill Snyder's there. But you got to watch out for them. I mean, they're a solid 8-9 win team. Definitely the million-dollar mullet there in Oklahoma State and Coach Mike Gundy. He's a man. He's 50 now. He's 50. He turned 50 a couple of days ago. So, but they're going to be really strong. It's going to be interesting to see Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma and Tom Herman at Texas if they can, you know, Lincoln Riley can keep Oklahoma on the path that Bob Stoops has built there. He turned the program over in good hands, I think. I think Lincoln Riley is going to be able to do it. But two young guns, Lincoln Riley and Tom Herman. It's going to be fun to watch them, you know, in their careers there in the Big 12.
Well, I'm knocking on the Old Timers Club door, I guess. 2 years, I'll be the Big 5-0, so we'll see what happens. Certainly, we'll talk about – let's go into the – you mentioned the Pac-12. I got them as number five, as I mentioned. The year is you know, in parity with USC. They're not what they used to be. I really am not that excited about the Pac-12. They get a lot of attention from the national media. If they get all the attention from Colin Cowherd. They get a lot talked about, but they aren't what they used to be. With the Pac-12, I ask you, what have you done for me lately? Why do you deserve to be a power conference? You're not. Let's move on to something bigger and better, and that's why you're ranked number five in the power conference rankings.
Well, they're going off the playoff appearance by Washington last year and also the Rose Bowl win by USC. And USC is actually the probably the second or third favorite team to win the national title this year behind Alabama and Ohio State. Also, Sam Darnold is the clearly the Heisman front runner. They're really high on Sam Darnold because of the things he did last year, came in week three, and they only lost one game after he came in. I think he went 7-1 as a starter. They finished the 9-3, 10-3, something like that, after he played. He's the highest front runner by far. But if they're based off the stats last year, he did play against a lot of teams that had really terrible defenses, Notre Dame being one of them, where he put up gaudy numbers, 300-400 passing yards, 3-4 touchdowns. So we'll see what that translates to this year when some of these teams he's going against are actually a little better. But he did have the huge blowout win against Washington. So we'll see. But, yeah, it's a two-man race in the Pac-12. It's Washington, USC. Stanford's always going to be solid. Yeah, UCLA with Josh Rosen is solid. But it's just between those two teams, I think.
Well, you know, and I don't know how long you can stay around. We're certainly standing by for Mo from the BS Sports Show, and we're going to continue our college football preview and talk a little NFL. But let's talk a little bit about some of these games that could shake up these rankings or at least make me take a second look at what maybe could happen with the way the power rankings are. Again, this is our annual college football preview. Obviously, next week we'll start talking about the actual games and we'll start talking about the season. But what we're doing now is we're just kind of taking an overall preview of the season and what we expect for it to look at. But let's talk about this game coming up on August 31st, and that's Tulsa at Oklahoma State. Again, Oklahoma State can make a lot of noise, but if Tulsa comes in there and rattles the tree, as we've said and joked about many times, everybody's got a plan to get smacked in the face. And Tulsa has that ability to give that punch to Oklahoma State.
Hey, you got a lot of rum in that coffee this morning. Yeah, Oklahoma State's one of these teams that probably going to be a top 10 team when the season's over with. I don't see any problems there. I see about a 40-point win for OSU.
It's more of the Irish whiskey in the coffee this morning.
Right. That's good stuff.
Well, let's Let's talk a little bit about the two Colorados, Colorado State versus Colorado, in that matchup on September 1st. What are your thoughts there?
I've been hearing a lot of good things about Colorado State, how they're really probably going to emerge kind of middle of the pack team in the Pac-12 this year. I can't believe that's always their first game of the season, Colorado State and Colorado. It's one of those big rivalry games. There's a trophy for it, but I can't think of the name. You know, it's almost like the Elk and Bucket in a way, the Civil War, these big rivalry games. But for Colorado State in this game, though, it's surprising people.
Don't say Civil War. So wrong to say Civil War these days. Just kidding. That's another show, another topic. Another show, another topic. Let's talk about Washington at Rutgers. You know, we don't really give much credit and much look to Rutgers. I mean, after all, it's Rutgers. Come on, give it a break. But I think Rutgers, you know, again, going back to my whiskey and the coffee, but I think Rutgers can give Washington a run for their money at home.
Now with Jake Browning up there still at quarterback for Washington, I say it's the easy win for Washington. I think they're just going to compete for the Pac-12 title with USC. So we'll have to look up when that USC-Washington game is, but that's going to be the game to watch.
Let's talk about some of these other games to watch coming up on September 2nd these are games that I can I put together that I think can shape the season, can shape and put clear the smoke out of 2018 and basically say to me, okay, here's the last man standing. You look at Michigan versus Florida. That is an important matchup for both of them. If Florida beats Michigan, that's huge. If Michigan beats Florida, that's even huger for the Big Ten and for Jim Harbaugh and his squad.
It is, and we just talked about how Michigan's kind of being talked about regressing back a little bit this year. We know what Jim Harbaugh can do, though. Guy can coach, so he'll Michigan be ready. But the thing with Florida, they have 7 players suspended for this first game, and one of those players being the star wide receiver. So that's a huge factor. That's a big deal. And going to a game like this, you know, and this game's in where the Cowboys play, the AT&T Stadium in Dallas. So that neutral site game, Florida-Michigan, that's going to be awesome. Like I said, you know, Michigan got hit up by the draft, and Florida's got 7 suspended players. So it's going to be an intriguing matchup. We might see the lucky lefty, Malik Zaire, starting for Florida.
Talking about the Civil War in the North versus South, North Carolina State versus South Carolina, it will be a good matchup.
NC State is one of these teams that is being considered as a dark horse to make the playoffs. They're like a 200-1 shot, but their defense is really strong. They're a little better than a 200-1. Watch out for NC State, the Wolfpack, to really make some noise this year in the ACC.
Well, we're going to have to talk about it. We talked about it in joking and in whatever. Okay, so it is, in all seriousness, Florida State on September 2nd versus Alabama. We know how big of a game this is. We know how big of a matchup this is. How big of a win is it for either one of them? If Alabama beats Florida State, well, they've just won the national championship, haven't they? If Florida State beats Alabama, that doesn't have as big of implications to their season as Alabama beating Florida State. Thoughts on that huge matchup?
It'd be a bigger win for Florida State because I'm convinced Alabama has to lose 3 or 4 games before they're officially out of the playoff conversation. Because they can go through the ACC and lose 2 games or lose 2 or 3, but then they'll still win the SEC championship game somehow and they'll be considered for the playoffs. So it's a bigger game for Florida State. We talked about Sam Darnold, USC, as a Heisman front runner. Well, Alabama has 2 of those guys, Jalen Hurts, quarterback, and Bo Scarborough, the running back. Both of those guys can also be in New York when it comes time for the Heisman Trophy ceremony. So, but they got questions on defense. Jimbo Fisher's going to get Florida State up and going. They looked flat last year in these big games against they lose by 40 against Louisville last year. So it's going to be his season. DeAndre Francois, Florida State's quarterback.
Francois,
also a Heisman candidate.
Well, if Alabama gets put out of the playoff picture and they lose 3 games or they lose 4 games or they lose 5 games, and that's a big if, everybody's going to be saying, Nick Saban, get ready to go to Indianapolis because you're going to be the next head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. In all seriousness,
he's got a mate in Tuscaloosa. I don't know why you want to leave.
He would be driven out of town if he didn't make it to the playoffs. That's my point. The lynch mob would be waiting for him. Wait a minute. We can't say lynch mob anymore. Scratch that. The crowd would be waiting. I'm sorry. I'm not making light of a very sensitive issue. That's another show for another time. Cal at North Carolina. What are your thoughts there?
Another solid team in the ACC, North Carolina. Cal is up and coming, though. Cal's a solid middle-of-the-road team in the Pac-12. I'll take North Carolina in this, but watch out for this to be a close game.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, this is our annual college football preview with Mr. Rick, and we're standing by for Mo from the BS Sports Show. I'm not sure where he's at, but and so by all means, Rick, if you got a bail, you can just let me know, and I'll just keep rambling on to myself. But let's talk about another Big Ten matchup. Well, not Big Ten matchup. I'm sorry, a Big Ten team matchup, which I it's not basketball, so you know Maryland is not a powerhouse team, but they are at Texas, and we talked about that game earlier. But I think this would have huge implications for Maryland's season if they were able to beat Texas.
Oh, yeah, what a kickstarter for a season. That's when these program wins. That changes the culture to a program if they can get a big win against Texas like that, because Texas is going to be their offense is looking pretty scary under Tom Herman. So if Maryland can get this win, these are those types of games that are kind of program changers.
Speaking of program changers, how big of a program changer is on September 16th when Texas versus USC?
Yeah, that's just one of those sexy matchups you kind of dream for. You know, you go to a buddy's house and there's a big party. Yeah. you kind of revolve that game around food and cornhole and get some beers, and that's one of these type of games that you do that for. But if everything holds true about USC, this could be high scoring, but it's still a blowout win for USC.
You know, we haven't talked about Clemson yet, and obviously they're the national champions. They did win the national championship last year, didn't they? Am I right about that?
Yes,
I'm
sir.
Right about that,
yes,
right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man, I tell you what,
this
whiskey and my coffee makes everything a little blurry. I don't know. But let's talk about Clemson. They've got a tough schedule, and certainly a lot of people would think that, again, they are going to be right there in the mix, if not in the Final Four, if not in the playoffs again this year. But what are your thoughts on Clemson this year?
I'm just going to be interested in see what life is like after Deshaun Watson. I don't think they've named the starter yet for quarterback. They got a three-man race going in Clemson. I don't think this is their year. I don't think they're going to repeat playoff appearances, let alone a national championship. But I do think they're probably like an 8-win team, because you just don't lose a guy like Deshaun Watson, and then the very next season, you're still just as awesome as you were with Deshaun Watson. So life after Deshaun Watson, I do think they're going to be pretty competitive. Dabo Swinney is one hell of a coach. So, but I'm thinking 8, maybe 9 wins in a good bowl game. That'd be a successful year. After losing Deshaun Watson, that'd be a successful year.
Can you be awesome after Watson? We'll see what happens. Let's talk about some of these strengths of schedule. Arkansas Razorbacks. The Razorbacks' schedule is shaping up to be tough with a home game versus TCU in week 2, followed by a very, very difficult SEC slate. Let's see, they get Texas, and they get A&M on a neutral field. And, of course, then they have Auburn in mid-October. And then certainly games against South Carolina, Alabama, Ole Miss, and LSU. I think strength of schedule is like right there with Arkansas.
Yeah, it's crazy. It seems like Arkansas every year always has top 3 to top 5 toughest schedule in the country, them North Carolina, because of what they do in the non-conference. You know, they don't shy away from competition when they schedule these games in a non-conference. You know, they play the top two conferences, you know, Arkansas, North Carolina, and then they play all these really, you know, big time Power Five schools in their non-conference schedule. So both of them, they always top three, top five in the country in toughest schedule. At least
you know,
it seems that way every year.
Absolutely. Continuing our conversation about strength of schedule, Auburn Tigers. Auburn has to visit Clemson at Death Valley in week two, has a midseason stretch of three straight road games against LSU, Arkansas, Texas A&M, and the Tigers play Georgia and Alabama in two of the last 3 weeks of the season as well. But the games are at home, if that's any consolation, if there's a consolation prize for Auburn.
Well, Auburn's a team that we forgot to talk about because we talked about Florida being, you know, pretty good. Auburn's that same way. Auburn's the team that could actually challenge, and there's a small chance they could even dethrone Alabama this year and make the SEC championship game. Auburn's going to be tough. Clemson had a come-from-behind win last year at Auburn, but that was with Deshaun Watson. Now the issue's on the other foot. Going to be Auburn going to Clemson. I think Auburn is going to get the win at Clemson.
Well, I hope so. I mean, I like Auburn. I think they're the very good team that just seems to can't catch that break. So we'll see what happens. California Golden
well,
Bears.
Gus Malzahn. It's Gus Malzahn. You know what he does with the offense down there, and also quarterback transfer from Florida, Will Greer. No, I'm sorry, Jared Stidham from BYU. Stidham, I don't know if you remember him or not. That's Auburn's quarterback right now.
Absolutely, absolutely. Going on with our strength of schedule conversation, California, certainly Cal Golden Bears open the season against a North Carolina team that should still be competitive despite losing their quarterback, Mitch Trubisky, up to Chicago, which, by the way, Chicago better not have a quarterback issue anymore. Don't get me started on Chicago Bears and their quarterbacks, but Mitch Trubisky is exactly what so the Chicago Bears needed. I liked watching him in the preseason. But anyway, certainly he comes out of the Golden Bears. And 2 weeks later, the Bears face Ole Miss with another difficult out-of-conference matchup. And then their Pac-12 schedule is brutal with home games versus USC, Washington State, along with road games at Oregon, Washington, Colorado, Stanford, and UCLA. California Golden Bears does not have a golden paved road for them this year. You like how I did that?
No. Yeah. Now, as you mentioned, you know, how Mitch Trubisky went to Chicago, so North Carolina's working on a quarterback, you know, trying to get her quarterback replaced for him. But Cal's in that same position because 2 years ago Jared Goff went to the NFL. So Cal is also trying to, you know, replenish the quarterback load there. So it's an interesting matchup week one and week two. I don't see Cal winning both. Maybe they can go 1-1. But, 0-2 start for Cal seems more likely right here.
Well, fashionably late to the party, to our annual college football preview show is Mr. Mo from the BS Sports Show. Welcome, sir. How is you?
Good. Sorry, I had an uncooperative 3-year-old and wouldn't.
It's totally okay.
Down with me getting on the radio this early.
Oh, I totally understand it. Rick's got some youngins too, and I've just got two dogs, so I'm good. I don't have to answer to anybody but myself. We had a late start today too, so you know. And Rick, feel free to stay on as long as you want. Rick Riggin joins us from down in Evansville. Our annual college football preview. We were just talking about Mo. We were just talking about strength of schedules, and we've talked about some of the tough schedules that some of the teams have had, and we probably already talked about some of the ones that come to mind with you. But if you look at a schedule, strength of schedule, who do you think has the toughest schedule going into 2017-2018 season?
Wow. You know, I mean, the SEC West teams always seem to have a tough strength of schedule just at in conference play because those teams usually beat up on each other. But I like that a lot of the Big Ten teams have really tried to schedule tough out-of-conference games. So I think some of your top Big Ten contenders have done really well in scheduling that. Now, the Florida game with Michigan isn't probably going to be as tough that they suspended 7 players on that Florida team. But there are, you know, these teams that have done a lot better, I think, starting to schedule out-of-conference opponents at the beginning just because that it's going to help them so much towards the end of the year at that playoff. So I think you're right. Strength of schedule has become one of the biggest things now in college football. As before, you know, a lot of these big teams would have such cupcake schedules leading up to conference play. So it should be an exciting year. But you know, probably an Alabama or one of the top contenders of the Big Ten teams would probably rank up in the top strength.
Well, absolutely. And we'll continue on just kind of where I threw some rankings together, not really by any particular order, but just when I went and looked at the schedules and strength of schedules by conference, I was kind of saying, okay, well, some of these teams have harder than others. So I kind of developed a list to talk with. Doesn't necessarily mean that it's golden other than it's my list and it's my show. So it's the best list that's out there.
But, right.
Rick, we'll start with you, and then we'll circle back around to Mo. The next that I had on the list here was the Duke Blue Devils. Duke avoids playing Clemson this season, but that's one of the few breaks that it has on its schedule. If you look at their schedule, they face Northwestern, which is good, Baylor, before their ACC schedule even begins, and then they have a brutal home schedule that includes Miami, Florida State, Pitt, Georgia Tech, and Duke also faces North Carolina and Virginia Tech on the road. Duke has a tough schedule, Rick.
Yeah, they do, the ACC schedule. You know, for one, the ACC is probably arguably, we just talked about this earlier, the best conference in football right now. They have the national champion. I think they are the best because of the coaches, the head coaches they have. I think the head coaches in the ACC are far superior than, the SEC. SEC has one head coach. After that, I mean, who else is it? I mean, Coach O hasn't done anything yet, Kirby Smart. But back on Duke. Duke is one of these teams, you know, maybe top four, top five team in the ACC. So that tough ACC conference schedule, I would say it's probably, where'd you rank it, Tom? Is it the same? Is it top 20, top 30, top 40 toughest schedule, or it's just what you're going off of?
I took the top, what I thought would be 25 toughest schedules. And so I was kind of going from the toughest down. So I basically had them at number six, I believe, is where we're at. I didn't put numbers on them. I just put the teams down in order in which I wanted to talk to them. So it wasn't an official ranking by any means. But anyway,
gotcha.
thanks, Rick, for exposing me and exposing my weaknesses. Thanks, Rick, for exposing my lack of show prep. No, I'm just kidding. Mo, Duke Blue Devils, what say you?
Well, it's definitely a tough schedule. If I'm Duke, it's probably – I mean, it would seem like a blessing to not play in Clemson, but if they lose a couple of tough games, you know, beating a Clemson team might have helped. So it could be a blessing and a curse not playing Clemson this year for this team, but it's definitely going to be a tough road for the Duke Blue Devils football team.
Now, if you want to talk about out-of-schedule tough conferences, tough schedules, if you will, you really have – I'm talking about the Florida Gators. You have a hard time finding a tougher out-of-conference schedule than Florida, who opened the year against Michigan and close out the regular season versus Florida State, which is a big rival for them. While the Gators also avoid Alabama and Auburn in the SEC, they still have to play LSU, Texas A&M, along with Tennessee and Georgia. Rick, Florida Gators, thoughts?
Yeah, like we said earlier, then, you know, Mo, hey, how you doing, Mo? good
hey.
Talking to you again.
You as well.
Yeah, we also talked about the seven players suspended for that first game against Michigan, one of them being their star wide receiver. So I really want to see. I think the lucky lefty, Malik Zaire, is going to be their starting quarterback. I'm not sure if it's been announced yet, but I think he'll probably be the starter. But to start with Michigan and with Florida State and then play the SEC, if those players are suspended for the entire year, then that's really going to be a tough road for Florida. But I do think Jim McElwain is doing great things at Florida. I think he's got the program going in the right direction. So with that schedule and losing these players like they did, that's really going to hurt a lot.
Well, what are your thoughts on the Florida Gators down in the swamp?
Well, the Gators definitely have a tough schedule, but they also have a lot of talent there. Again, I think what Rick said, it's going to depend how long these players are suspended, because you can drop a game with a schedule like Florida's and still be okay with that schedule that they play. So, you know, a tough schedule is, you know, can be really tough for a team and a fan base, but a tough schedule can also be beneficial. If you drop that first game in Michigan with those guys suspended and then you bring them back, it could wind up balancing itself out because you play so many tough teams and tough games. So it could just like with Duke, it could definitely be a blessing and a curse. So we'll see. Again, like what Rick said, it's going to depend on how long these players are going to be suspended for.
Absolutely. And you know, the fact that we're even having conversations about suspended players is just totally. We had this conversation about the kid from Alabama who got a DUI, and Nick Saban says, well, you know what, we're playing Florida State, so you get to play. And we made the analogy, if they were playing just a ridiculous school that they could definitely beat, that he would be suspended. And I think that sends a wrong message. And I know we could get on a rant about that, but the fact that we're seeing suspensions across the board, it just shows a deeper problem in the NCAA that carries over to the NFL, as we're seeing with Ezekiel Elliott. So, again, this is, you know, we could get on our rants about that, but certainly these suspensions have got to figure out a way to figure whatever the reason for the suspensions. You're there to play football. You got a scholarship to play football. Go play football and just, you know, do your – and then you get all this money to play in the NFL. You get all these opportunities just handed to you. Excuse me. And you can't behave. I don't know. I'm going to get on a rant, so we'll get on over to Florida State Seminoles. Speaking of Florida State, they got a strong schedule as well. I think Florida State is going to like their schedule this year, but the Seminoles' quest for the college football playoff could be curbed early with games against Alabama, which we hope that Florida State beats Alabama because we don't want Alabama in the playoffs. We definitely mean me. And Miami in two of the first 3 weeks, where they also have Louisville at home, the Seminoles have to visit Clemson in Florida in November. So go ahead, Mo, and then we'll circle back around to Rick. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I think that Florida State definitely had a disappointing season last year. They were expecting much bigger things and just had a down year, whether it be with injuries or lack of play from, you know, suspected four or five-star athletes. So I think it's definitely a year that Jimbo Fisher will be looking to rebound this Florida State team. And you get to kind of set the tone at the first game of the year against Alabama, you know. And it'll be interesting to see. They do have a bunch of returning starters on defense, and they still have a great offense, but they're going to miss their starting running back from last year. But I think it's going to be a tough Florida State team. But, again, it'll measure, I think, Florida State's whole season by what starts with Alabama in this first game.
Yeah, like I talked about earlier, it's a lot of returning starters for Florida State. DeAndre Francois, quarterback's actually a Heisman contender, going against Alabama's defense, who got torn apart by the NFL draft. Alabama's going to – it was playing tough defense. But I would say it's a rebuilding year for the Alabama defense, although I think there's a new coordinator. It's definitely a new offensive coordinator because Lane Kiffin's at FAU. But Alabama's going through some little transitions. I think Florida State's catching them at the right time, so I think it'll be a close game. And a close loss to Alabama with Florida State's schedule in the ACC isn't the end of the world. If they can just finish out, if they do lose and go undefeated the rest of the way, they're going to be in the playoffs.
So, Rick, we'll start with you, and then we'll circle back around to Mo. You know, I wanted to make sure, obviously, because you're a huge follower and worshiper of Notre Dame Fighting Irish, that we did talk about their schedule. Now, I would say that their ranking of schedule, as far as if you look at the top 25, are somewhere around the middle of the road there, between 12 and 14, if you will. But head coach Brian Kelly really needs – you guys got to have a good year this year. I mean, Notre Dame – it's just Notre Dame. And if you play for Notre Dame, you got to win. If you don't win, you got to go somewhere else. And head coach Brian Kelly needs to dig the Fighting Irish out of the gutter. They need to pull themselves out somehow. And one, to keep his job, but also, I mean, who are the loudest college football fans in the world? Notre Dame.
The Irish fans, yeah.
And that's right. So tough home games include Temple, Georgia, we talked about earlier, USC. Certainly they have to visit Michigan State, which is going to be a huge game, North Carolina, Miami, and Stanford. So Notre Dame has their work cut out for them, and maybe Brian Kelly needs to start packing up his offices and getting bids on movers to the Colts. Well, anyway, go ahead.
Well, for his sake, his new coaching staff had better come through for him because they're the ones that are going to save his job this year. Like I said, Chip Long from Memphis, Mike Elko, new defensive coordinator from Wake Forest, they're the guys that have Brian Kelly's job security in their hands, the way I see it. So it can't get any worse than last year. win total wise, it could, but they went like 3 or 4 games before they even had a sack. So you can't do any worse than that. But yeah, I think with their schedule though, and like you said, I mean, I could see 8 to 9 wins. And Mo, you might like to hear your opinion about this too. If you watch any ESPN and watch Trevor Maddich talk about them, he thinks they're an actual dark horse that gets to 10 wins. And if they get to 11 wins, that'd be one foot in the door for the playoffs. So I'm not going to go quite that far, but I'm going to say 8 wins, 9 wins. And I think Brian Kelly might be still Notre Dame's head coach with 9 wins. 8 wins, I'm not so sure, but that's where I think they'll be this year.
Mo, Notre Dame's up in your neck of the woods, sort of, kind of, at least north of Indianapolis. So what are your thoughts on Notre Dame this year?
Well, you know, I think that defense needs to definitely play much better this year. Terrible secondary and linebacker play last year. But to me, there's a problem at quarterback, and I don't mean talent-wise. There's been a problem at quarterback the last few years because you've got talented guys who don't want to stick around the program anymore, whether it's leaving early for the NFL, which Deshaun Kizer definitely could have used another year or two in college. But you've got guys transferring. So I don't know if it's the trust in Brian Kelly, the trust in the offensive coaches, or what's going on there, but there's definitely a problem at quarterback because you've seen a lot of talent in the quarterback position there the last 3 years, but nobody's stuck around. So it could be time for a coaching change. I don't know if it's the message, if it's I know some former quarterbacks have felt that Brian Kelly had lied to them, but there's definitely an issue there, and hopefully that with some new coaches coming in that can be rectified. But there's definitely an issue at Notre Dame, and maybe that involves a clean sweep if Brian Kelly doesn't get it done this year. Yeah, I think Notre Dame could be an 8-win team unless they can pull out a couple of close games. But it's going to be a tough schedule, one that Notre Dame is definitely, with a lot of younger players, is definitely not going to be used to as much. So, I agree with Rick. I think it's probably an 8, maybe 9-win team.
Well, absolutely. And here, you think that Chip Kelly could keep his job with 9 wins, maybe. I'm not sure. Again, you look at things completely different with Notre Dame than you do when you do other teams. IU, for example, gets 9 wins. We're ecstatic. We're building a statue. But with Notre Dame, it's a completely different schedule. Guys, I wanted to, and we already talked with you, Rick, about some high school football down in Evansville, but I wanted to make sure that we covered our regional high school football. You're up there in the Fort Wayne area. Talk with us about opening week up there in the Fort, Mr. Mo.
I saw one game last night, and a perennial powerhouse who's had a couple of down years. The Fort Wayne Snyder looked absolutely amazing last night with a 40-plus point win over Fort Wayne Northside. I think that they're going to be a tough schedule. You know, we do have a couple of 5A schools that could be tough in Homestead as well. And my alma mater, New Haven, hopes to bounce back from a little bit of a struggle last year and in the offseason with some injuries. So it's going to be a fun high school football season here this year. But if you're looking for a team from this area, I think that plays in the state championship, Fort Wayne Snyder looks tough after opening week.
And we got some games today down in your neck of the woods there, Rick. You got Lutheran North against Evansville Modern Day. Evansville Modern Day obviously always has a good, moderately good football team. You're not as good as the wrestling team. But Evansville Modern Day, Lutheran North, what are your thoughts there, Rick?
No problems here with Modern Day. Modern Day is one of those top 2A schools in the state. So I see them getting easy win today, hitting the SIEC schedule here. You know, Tom, that's a tough conference. Talked about them and, you know, about 4 other schools here that are going to be ultra-competitive. Modern Day is going to be super competitive. They should get an easy win today, though.
So tonight, Mo, Hammond-Clark versus Whiting. I think I said that right. Thoughts on that game?
Well, you know, I like the Whiting team. I've seen them play a couple of times. Good coaching staff there. I haven't seen the Hammond team play, but this Wayne team has brought a tough team to Fort Wayne a couple of times to play. So they're definitely a fun team to watch and team to watch out for. They have a very fun offense to watch.
Mo, do you have any thoughts on Elkhart Memorial or Elkhart Central?
I've been to a couple of those games a few years ago when I worked up in the South Bend area. And you want to talk about a fun rivalry. I mean, I know there's schools in Fort Wayne and Indianapolis and Evansville that have some fun rivalries. But, man, it gets downright nasty. for this game. So if you want to watch a game that's full of a rivalry and yelling from the fans from the opposite sidelines, that's a fun game. Elkhart Central and Elkhart Memorial. The Elkhart Central team, though, has been tough over the past few years.
The other game tonight, guys, in high school for Indiana is Noblesville Lions and Union. Rick, do you have any thoughts on that game?
No, that's not my neck of the woods. I actually don't have any idea. But I don't know anything about those two teams.
Well, actually, Noblesville Lions is a pretty good team, and we'll see what happens against Union. Union has a very, very strong defense, although they've got some young players coming up from JV, much like the problem that we saw with Center Grove and Warren Central last night. Mo, do you have any thoughts on Noblesville versus Union?
Yeah, you know, I actually went to a Noblesville game last year. My sister lives in that neck of the woods now, and you're right, a fun team to watch, and I think that's probably the team I put my money on. The Union team I haven't seen play, but Noblesville, I think, has a pretty good program.
Well, guys, let's wrap it up and put a bow on it. But tonight is Dallas Cowboys and the Indianapolis Colts. We'll start with you, Mo. What are the takeaways we got from camp? Obviously, we realize we've got some work to do, but it was just week one. It was just the preseason. I know that, but we saw a lot of holes that the Colts need to plug in the game against Detroit. And I know, Rick, you're a big Lions fan, so you weren't exactly unhappy with the results of that. But what were some of our takeaways from camp going into tonight's game against Dallas? We won't have to worry about Ezekiel Elliott. I don't want to get on him again, but go ahead, Mo.
Well, I think there could be some guys on defense that could step up and play well. The offensive line concerns me again. The Ryan Kelly being out to the start of the regular season is going to be tough, and it just proved that offense is, I think, terrible without Andrew Luck. We need Andrew Luck in order to be a contender, so I think that's what's going to be the big thing: is how can you protect Andrew Luck once he comes back?
Do you think, Rick? Do you think that Ballard has done everything he can do to have the pieces in place for the 2017-2018 Colts season?
I guess. Probably. That's a new GM, right? I mean, he took over back in spring.
Wake
he didn't
up,
have like. What's
up? I was just kidding. Go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say about the Colts-Cowboys game, not that I'm sidestepping your question, is I'm looking forward to seeing Jalen Smith make his debut and get back on the field towards ACL in the Fiesta Bowl, you know, a couple years ago, or, you know, senior year, a little over a year ago, and been out of action since because of the nerve damage and everything. Looking forward to seeing him back in uniform, back on the field, see how he looks, even though I'm not a Cowboys fan, but looking forward to seeing Jalen Smith make his debut.
All right, guys, Mo, any final thoughts on the Indianapolis Colts, college football, or any other words of wisdom you'd like to part on us today?
Well,
sir?
keeping our fingers crossed there's no more injuries for the Colts tonight against the Cowboys. And I came up with a slogan that I sent to the NFL when we talked earlier about guys getting in trouble and suspended. And I don't know if the NFL will use it. But my slogan for the NFL was, don't be a dick, just play.
I love it. Don't be a dick, just play. All right, Rick Riggin, we appreciate you joining us. Obviously, Rick, where can people follow your banter on Twitter? I know you're a big Twitter banterer. That's a mouthful. Go right ahead, sir.
For me, on Twitter, it's @Riggin_Rick. So anything you bitch want or complain about, just hit me up on Twitter. I'll answer all your questions and get into debate with you. And also, a great way to help support your local veterans, get yourself an AmVets membership. Go to any AmVets post anywhere in the state of Indiana. Get signed up. It's really easy. You can be a veteran or a relative of a veteran. Just stop into any AmVets post in Indiana and get some information. It's a great way to help support your local veterans.
All right, guys. I was going to go here earlier, and I totally forgot. And I know that this would be something that Rick is going to be tweeting about and bantering about. Conor McGregor! What are your thoughts, Rick? Conor McGregor and Mayweather. Who
We could probably do a whole segment on this next Saturday if you wanted to, but I think McGregor's going to have to do it in six rounds. If it goes past six rounds, he doesn't have a chance. I think he's just going to wear out. Mayweather's going to dance around him and win by decision.
Mo, Conor McGregor. I just love saying that. Go ahead.
Well, to me, you know, if it happens like Rick says, which could be very possible, I think if McGregor goes to decision, in my eyes, that's a win for him. You go to a decision with what people consider the greatest boxer ever. At the end of the day, I think that's a win for Conor McGregor. What I would do if I was McGregor, though, you know, you remember when Tyson bit Holyfield's ear twice? First time he only got a warning. So what if McGregor gets excited and gives an elbow or a knee strike? Just gets a warning and the match goes on. So I think Conor McGregor has a chance in this one.
I don't think Conor McGregor is going to do anything like that. It's going to mess up his pocketbook. All right, Mo, where can people find your work and your masterpieces, sir?
On Twitter, at Mo Radio Show.
All right, buddy. Rick, you have yourself a good week. Mo, you have yourself a good week. We have got to get out of here. We are out of time, and we'll talk with you guys soon.
All right, thank you. See you guys.
Thanks. Thanks. Rick Riggin joins us from down in Evansville, and obviously Mo for the BS Sports Show, our annual college football show today. Great time. Thanks to Steve Wilson for talking some NASCAR with us. Sorry we got a little bit of a late of a start, but that's just the way it goes sometimes with live radio. My name is Tom Marquis, El Presidente. We do this thing called The Balance every Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11. Remember, don't drink and drive. It isn't cool. We'll see you next week right here on The Balance Radio Network.
Join us next week for The Balance. In the meantime, check us out on Twitter, T-Balance, or Facebook, The Balance, or online at www.thebalanceonline.com.